When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, I'm Claire from Wild Ginger Running, the trail and ultra running YouTube channel, and this is the podcast version of my weekly live chat with an athlete, coach, or other running expert. The link to the original film on YouTube is in the show notes. Check out my Instagram and YouTube channel for more training advice, inspiration, and gear reviews. Everything is Wild Ginger Running, and my blog is wildgingerrunning.co.uk. Support me on Patreon if you enjoy this free advice at patreon.com/wildgingerrunning. Enjoy this podcast and see you next week for more.
Hello, welcome everybody. It's 6:30 on a Wednesday night. That means we're live from Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel, and tonight I have a very, very special guest. I would like to introduce to you Jos Naylor, fell running legend, all the way from Cumbria at his home in Gosforth, and also his friend here today as well, Toddy, and we'll get more on that in just a moment. So let's start with a big hello to you, Jos. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. This bit of sun shines out this last 2 or 3 days. It's warmed the thing up, and all the late flowers that come out, the hedgerows are the most colouring I've ever seen. They're absolutely beautiful around here.
Oh, that's lovely. And you guys have been out recently, haven't you? You just did the arm at the weekend, is that right? You're still going strong?
On Sunday we did the short course. It was 40 years since I last did the arm. I think it was, it had a different name altogether, I think, in them days.
But, the Kim.
After 40 years, and just do the short course.
Fantastic. So how did it go? Did you have any arguments between you? Because you are best friends, aren't you?
we didn't fall out at all, really.
Lost a couple of times.
Just a couple of times we got lost. It's not a two-day marathon, is it, if you don't get lost?
Yeah. So who did most of the map reading then?
I did most of the map reading.
Here's the map reader.
Yeah. So we'll just talk a little bit about you, Toddy. So how did you get to know Jos?
Right, so I worked at the nuclear power plant down in Sellafield, and Jos was on the same shift rotor as myself. So, and I already started dabbling in running by then, about 35 years ago now. And because once you meet Jos, it's a case of, right, Toddy, you can come out with me, and you think, me? Go out with Jos Naylor? Go on then, I'll give it a go. And that's how our friendship started. It just started through running, really. And then we just used to go out, I used to come down to Wasdale and after work and things like that. We used to go out in the fells, didn't we?
I knew part of your idea was that GNC.
The Jos Naylor Challenge, yeah, we put that Jos Naylor Challenge together, and we just had fun really out in the fells. I did a couple of charity runs with Jos, for leukemia research. He did for multiple sclerosis as well when he was 60. And just generally, Claire, I just become one of his best friends. And now my job is running social media, because we've got a book, got a publication coming out later in the year. And so I run his social media. I'm also looking after all his memorabilia and trying to put it all in order, make sure it's all there for future use, and filling bits in that just been filled in for us. And really, because history, it's fell in history. This guy is, what you say, is a legend, eh? And if you don't watch it, we lose them stories, and we just lose what it's all about and what Feldrun is about, and you can't let that happen.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there. And just to, if anybody doesn't know who Joss Naylor is, I just want to read a few of your achievements out, Joss. So you were born in Wasdale Head, as a lot of people will know, and you were a farmer for many, many years. And during that time, you've just done so many amazing runs in the Lake District. So just to read just a few out. So in the 1970s, you did 61 peaks in under 24 hours. Then you bodged it up to 63 peaks in 72. And then you got the record in 1975, which was 72 peaks. So that record stood until the late 80s. A lot of your records have stood until the late 80s, or even longer, such as the one that you're going to write the book about, which we'll come to in a moment. So you've done the Three Peaks Challenge, Welsh 3000ers, you had the Pennine Way record until 1989, there's Wainwright Coast to Coast, Lakes, Meres and Waters, which we'll talk about more later, and the Wainwrights, obviously, before Steve Birkinshaw broke it, and then really impressively, I think, even more impressive is running 60 Lakeland fell tops, aged 60, and then 70 at 70. So I'm sure I asked you a while ago if you were going to do 80 at 80, but I think you said you weren't going to do that. Is that right?
I didn't do my 80 at 80. I did a run from the churchyard at Colbeck, where my father was interred, to Greendale, where he retired, and where I retired to in the Lake District. It was just a lovely day out, and it was one of those days that'll stick in your mind forever. Like, you know, it was just good turnout of people and just a lovely day with it.
Oh, and so that sounds like a really, really great day on the fells, and I know you've had a lot of great days on the fells, but do you have one achievement that's really, really close to your heart that you're like the most proudest of? Can you even pick one?
I think the one that really stuck out in my mind was the run up and down Scawfell Pike. I was going to meet these four young officers from Germany at the Wooden Bridge at Brackenslaw at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I went up there at 2 o'clock to go up Scawfell Pike with them, and they'd been gone an hour, and I thought, well, this is a good chance, you know, to see what time I can go up and down Scawfell Pike in. And anyways, my friend John Sutherland turned us up from the Wooden Bridge below Brackenslow, and had a cracking run up. I ran up by the river, which isn't, you know, there isn't really a path there from way across at the bottom of Brown Town till you get to the bottom of Little Brown Town. And I jumped the river there, and my little legs just took off. I ran straight up Little Brown Town to the end of what we call the Sour Ground, and I cut back on a 45-degree angle. And I come out on the main crag on the top of Scawfell skyline. I sprinted back across the cairn. Just before I got to the cairn, I passed the four boys who had set up an hour ahead. I got to where that big heap of stones is, about maybe 100 metres from the summit. I turned off to the right there. And just then the helicopter came, spinning around above my head. And the cameraman was sitting with his feet out, and the old commanding officer who was in charge of the four boys. And he said, "Hell's bells, I've never seen anything like that in my life." He said, "Get down to the bottom." And anybody dropped in, and there's a bit of green, craggy ground that runs down to the top of Bayer's Hill. I shot down there, and then right down the top of Lingmell, down the end of Lingmell, back to the Wooden Bridge. And I said to John Sutherland, I said, "What time have I done?" And he said, 47 minutes. Well, I never thought any more about 47 minutes till just quite a few years after Stoffel Pike race, for the championship race, and also the team over from Italy. And one of the Italian runners did 50 minutes. And I thought after that, my time of 47 minutes wasn't a bad time.
It's all right.
That odd one, I think, got down to 50 minutes since. But you know, you've got to have the legs to climb and come back down. And that day was the day I just clicked.
Yes, yeah. And
the 6 hours in my mind, because there's so many people go up and down there, and you think, how long is it taking them? And some of them takes 5-6 hours.
Yeah.
And somebody went up in 47 minutes. Well, that's impossible.
It is incredible. And am I also right in thinking that you didn't particularly train for any of this? You know, not like people would train today with a training plan and everything.
Training went into that one. You know, odd time when your legs are right and you are right. And the day was right. It was just a bit of high cloud, you know, towards the end of July time, and just a lovely day for running. Just a little bit of a breeze, but not what you call windy.
Yeah.
Just real conditions. It was dry underfoot and everything right.
Yeah. It sounds amazing. And so for people who aren't familiar with you and all your amazing runs, could you just give us a little bit of the background? How did you even start fell running in the first place?
Well, the first race ever I ran was at the Mountain Trail in 1960, and I had no intention of running. I was just having my breakfast in the middle of the road. Wilson Farrer, who was the proprietor of the Wassail Head Hotel at that time, a good chap was Wilson, and Addie Griffin, you'll have heard of Addie Griffin, his road books on the fell tigers and all sorts of things. He was the secretary of the Lake District. I don't know what name it had then, you know, but it was the one that put the Mountain Trail on then. And he asked Wilson if there's anybody in you that would probably run the Mountain Trail. And Wilson said, well, Josh might have a go. And that morning he come round and I was on my breakfast and he said, would I like to run the Mountain Trail? And I said, well, I haven't got any shoes, I haven't got any shorts, I've got now. And I said, I'll have a run anyway, it's like, so I just had my big strong farm boots on and I put the legs off my trousers and I started off with them. And I was running quite well, like I was with the two leaders at top of Gilbarra. The next one checkpoint was Robertson's Cairn, and just as I got to Robertson's Cairn, George Rhodes, I think he was just in front, was there, but I knew a good road through Lingy Crags, and I shot in down the forest and I crossed the river and I was crawling through underneath the forest trees because I'd never been thinned out in any case. I got to the wire and just sort of threw my leg over the wire, I got cramped. So I sat down there for about 10 minutes and then first two runners come, like, you know, so I had a good lead then, but I had cramp, and anyway I just fought on with cramp. And the next checkpoint from Blacksail Hut was Robinson's Cairn. No, Westman Cairn, up on the top of Gable. And then from there to the White Bridge, just at the end of the town. When I got to the end of the town at Stayhead, there was two old ladies having their picnic and there was salt cellar, and I said, could I have some of the salt? So I got half of the salt and put it down my throat and had a couple of mouthfuls of water out of the back. And I got rid of my cramp and I trotted away after that. I think next checkpoint was top of Great End, top of Ling Mill, and then back into Wassail Hotel. But I was a bit stiff leg next day, like, you know.
Yeah, just a little bit. Did you put your legs in a beck? You often, like, put your legs in the river, don't you, afterwards?
Aye, well, when I was down at Bowdoin, there was a good pool, you know, when you come up the path to Eiffel Gate there, and you could just wade in and sit down, and, you know, you'd just be head looking out. And
yeah.
Give some check and then go and take the wet things off and have it dry off, and that was it.
Yeah.
Job was a good.
Yeah, good for the recovery of the legs, isn't it, that? And so
a lot, like, you know, it's all you need, really.
Yeah. So how old were you? Like, you had never run before that day, had you? Or did you just generally run after the sheep and things like that? How old were you when all this was happening?
I had a few runs, four to 5 years earlier than that, and I had a bad accident. I had about 8 months when I was running really, really well, but I wasn't completing anything, and jumped this way a fence, and the hand slipped off the top of the horse was wet, and I landed on a little stone looking out the ground, just like a spike, and it went down the spine where I'd been operated on.
Ow.
And straitjacket for 8 weeks down in Manchester. And then when I got put out, I didn't get any physio or anything. This consultant in Manchester said, give us a note, and said, give that to your doctor. And he said, he'll arrange some physiotherapy for you. But he just rubbed in his hand, threw it in the bin, and wrote us a note that I was fit to work. And at the last home, he chose to get my socks on. You know, I was just straight up in a straitjacket.
Ouch.
It took a few weeks, you know, to get loosened up and get to going again, like, you know.
Yeah, because you're well known for running through extreme pain and running for a long time in really hard conditions, like weather-wise and heat-wise. But you've run for many years with this back problem, didn't you? So does that change your relationship with pain, do you think, if you're just constantly in pain with your back?
Well, before I got operated on, really. You know, in the early days, there was no operations, you know, it was just sort of when the 50s come in, and even then they weren't very keen on operating on spines, like, you know.
Uh-huh.
I don't think they are to this day, like, you know, I think that they only do it if it really is necessary.
Yeah. You know? And so I just want to read out some nice comments from people who are fans of yours and who are listening tonight, just to give you a sense of who's here. So I'm just going to read out some of the live people who are chatting to us tonight. So if you want us to say something to Joss, then write something right now in the live chat and I'll be reading it out. There is a bit of a delay from YouTube to this program that I use here. So if I don't see your comment immediately, I'll read it out in just a tick. So just definitely write something to Joss here tonight. If you've got any questions as well, then please do ask them. So Joss, we've got Hannah Baisley watching. She says, proper legend tonight. So she is really happy to see you here tonight. We've got Adrian Orange. He says, ready and raring for this one. I've met Joss several times and he is a top bloke. Then we've got Arlene M. She says, hello from Maryland in the USA. So we've got international audience tonight. Then we've got Fiona and Mark from Derbyshire. They hope that you're well. They want to ask you a question too. They said, what is your favourite fell to walk up?
Now that's rather a good one, really. I think one of my favourite fells, and I think it was more or less, we lived in the Grandale, and I adopted Middle Fell. It was just so nice to have a trot of a night with the dogs, you know, up the Blaze, around back of the town, and come back over Middle Fell. It was so nice and grassy and easy on the legs, and, you know, at the top of Middle Fell, you get a good panorama of not all of the lake you see, but you look across the Coniston Fells, Langrow Fells, and more or less, you know, right round, and it's just a lovely little fell, you know, and it's become very, very popular, you know.
Yeah, there's a fell race up there as well, isn't there? I did that one year.
Fell race a lot of years, really. It's starts down in the village at the Strands in Worcester, comes through the valley bottom, and then round the back of Grandale and up on the top.
Yeah, it's really hard because it's basically just up and then just down. It's just like a typical short fell race.
It makes you stick in, like.
Am I right in thinking that Middle Fell is behind the house where you grew up, the farm, Middle Row?
Where I retired, and it was the same at Bowderdale. Grandale was one side of it, where I retired to, and where I farmed for 37 years. I looked at Middle Fell every morning, at least all day, because it was just behind the farm, more or less.
I'm just showing people a picture of that as well, and I'm just showing them a picture of you at the farm as well, with your arm over a stable door, it looks like, on a nice stone building. So that's really good for people to see where you're from there.
I once had a chap come to see us from America, and he had flown into Heathrow somewhere, and he had a pushback, and he come to see us.
Wow.
He said, I don't believe that such a bloke exists. And that day, I've been shaving sheep, and I just finished one lot in the cubic house, and it was absolutely thrown it down in bucket holes. And I was chesting them out, and I just had a pair of old dirty clipping breeches on. I had nothing on the top. And just at that point, this old duck come running out and did about 6 or 8 young ones with it. And I just catched a handful in each hand, and I put them in his pocket. And he looked at me as though I was mad like.
You put the ducklings in his pocket?
Aye.
What for? Like, as a present?
Well, sheep would have, you know, probably killed them because they're just a bit too old, like, you know. And they shouldn't have been there, like, you know. But
anyways, okay.
I just rode, and then the other ones, they were dry, like, and I had to fetch them across.
Yeah. Oh, so you had to protect them from the sheep.
And he turned them into cubicle house, and when I started shaving them, he looked up and he said, I believe now there is such men as you.
Ah. That's awesome that he came all the way from America to see you.
All the way from America, and the day didn't do justice. It was absolute storming.
Oh, no.
Come in the yard with pushing his bike like he had hired down in London somewhere.
A push bike or a motorbike?
Bike.
Wow. Yes.
Maybe say scale station probably and cycle up. I didn't ask him where he had cycled from, like.
Yeah.
Wow. It was quite an introduction for him.
Yeah. The Lake District doesn't always give us beautiful sunny days, does it?
I was blessed. I just had a pair of old skirt, dirty trousers on the bottom and nothing on the top. I was cheap grace.
Yeah. Well, it's just real, authentic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very authentic.
Yeah. I bet he was thrilled. If you'd found you suited and booted, then that would have been a bit strange. Well, we've got a question now from someone who's a lot closer than America, Steve Chilton, who's written many fell running books, including It's a Hill, Get Over It, and which you feature quite prominently. So Steve's here, and he wants to ask you a question as well. But he wants to ask about the Joss Naylor Challenge, because it's for the over 50s only, isn't it? And he wants to know, how did that come about? Oh, he probably knows. He wants you to tell everyone.
the over 50 challenge, it was Peter and I, and Peter was looking at a map one night when I went into work at BNFL, and he said, Josh, I've got a good thing here for you to do. And I said, where's that start from? And he said, Pooley Bridge. So he read out, you know, the route. And that's the following two nights, I ran it, you know, just from Pearly Bridge to the top of Dunmail. And then the following night, I ran the other way, and Ken Ledwood picked it up. But the first night, I ran it with my son-in-law at the time, Colin Dulson. And it was just a good thing to do. And, you know, we got sort of found out how long it was going to take, more or less. And we decided it was just a nice thing, and then we decided we'd do it for the older people. You know, the over 50s, but that come along rather later, you know, later on, because, you know, Chris Brashear thought it'd be a nice thing to have a thing, like, you know, somewhat similar to Bob Graham for the older runners to aim for. And we decided the times, because I ran it one morning, and Peter and another of my friends came out to meet us at Esk Pike, and that day was the most disgusting day you could ever be out in the fell.
Oh no, not another one.
Peter went down with hypothermia just after the stretcher box.
Oh no.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
And the other pacer, we left him at Beckhead. He was going to go around the backside of Kirk Fell and meet him on Black Sail. And when we catch up to him, he was shaking like a leaf.
Oh God.
It's just, you know, send them in. And anyways, with these fishermen's sort of gowns on, and they come down to their ankles, and, you know, they were but real thick, heavy material, you know, what fishermen wear when they go and catch cod on the Icelandic trawlers. When we come to the end of what they call the wall end on the sports, Colin had to stop and put another keg underneath. He couldn't maintain body heat. It's Peter and John that ate now the food we were going to eat. I ran that on one biscuit from Holy Bridge to Grendel Bridge.
On one biscuit? Oh no. Was it a good biscuit?
It must have been a good biscuit, aye.
A really big one.
Oh, it wasn't. That was a Turkson. And we got one meal, and Collins went and had a bit of cake and a cup of tea, and I said, I'll just carry on trotting and to catch up to it. Aye. And they said, we were going to feed us on S Pike. And we got the top S Pike. And he said, we would have no more need than the food than what you were. So they ate it.
They ate it? Oh, my goodness. Oh, I'm surprised you're still friends. I would not have been happy with that.
But we set off at Wasdale there, and it was quite a decent morning, really. So John and I took some clothes with us, took spare clothes and everything, and spare food. And by the time we got to Stye, it was just lashing it down. It was... The paths were just rivers, and as Josh rightly says, there we went, met up the escorts to where we were going to meet them, up coming off S Pike, and you couldn't see in front of you. You could hardly stand up. You were standing out in rain. You were just drenched. And yeah, it was right. We went over great then. We dropped down again. I made a great gable, and I said, "That's it. There, I'm going to have to go in." I said, "I just can't keep going."
Yeah. You've got to know what you're doing, haven't you, in that kind of environment. Well, there's a lot of respect for you, Joss, and all of your friends, obviously, on the live chat still. So we've got Antonio Cardinelli. He says hello to Joss Naylor the Great and to all. You've got lots of fans, Joss. Denise Park says hi. She says she was with you last Friday, and she says you were on excellent form, and she says you'll have a lots of interesting answers for us here tonight. And she's put a nice photo of you and her up on her comment as well, so I've just shown that to everybody. Jim Grant is a big fan. He found out about this chat and he said, this is the best news, Claire. He is the finest on our fells for sure. So lots of love there from Jim Grant. Then we've got Ned's Housing Co-op. He says, great to hear from Joss, the ultimate Lakeland fell runner, without a doubt. And then we've got some more questions here. We've got John Pollard, who says, does Joss's son race or run? Because there's a Joss Naylor Vet 60 who's entered in the Duddon Valley race this Saturday.
It's not my son, no. I've been asked this a few times. It could be Joss Naylor.
Do they not have a Vet 80 category?
No.
They don't? Oh, they should have one, because then you'd win all the time.
Well, that's probably true, Claire. You would probably win all the time.
Yeah.
But no, I think we have a Vet 70, but we don't have a Vet 80.
Yeah. So how do you mind me asking how old you are at this moment in time, Joss?
85.
Fantastic. And you're still going strong?
I wouldn't call it strong, but I'm still going.
An excellent answer there. I wanted to ask you the secret to running at such what should we call it? A wise old age. Arlene M has beaten me to it, though. She says she's only 62, and she's wondering what the secrets are to running until you're 80, basically. So, what is your secret, Joss? Is it a pint of Guinness every evening?
The pint of Guinness helps. But you've got to have a lot of luck, really, you know, because anybody who's had a lifetime, some of the joints will go at some point. I was very unlucky, really. My knee went when I was just about 17, 18, 1952, and it's something you've got to live with, really, if you get injuries. And, to go through a lifetime the way I'm nothing that's really stopped me. I've been very, very lucky.
I can see in one of these pictures you're using like hiking poles, like on the arm and things. Is that for your knee?
It takes the weight off the knee. You know, between me and you, it's knackered. So that helps. We'd give it another 10 years, I reckon.
Another 10 years? Wow. I was going to give it 15. I think that 100 should be a good aim for you there.
That's a case. Once you get Josh going with his sticks and his stride and he gets his breath properly, he just goes on. We found this on Sunday when we did the on light. But James, who came with us, he said, "I can't believe how fast he can walk for his age, fair enough." But once you get him going, that's it. It's just keep him going. And I think it's a case of how does Josh keep going at 85? Well, he just keeps going. He just goes out, enjoys himself, sees a few friends, goes out with different people, and just generally enjoys his life.
Yeah, so there's no special secret, but just luck. That's what you're saying there.
Yeah.
You made it.
Yeah.
You've got to be born with it, though. You know, I was probably what the old lad said who operated on this. You know, it was about chance of in about 150,000 or more than a million. You know, there'd be one person with no bone structure in the big heart.
Yeah, so you've got both of those. And so there's some questions coming in now about some advice for people, not on getting old and running, but just running in general. So ACOG says, "Hi Joss, I've just started Munros, running Munros in Scotland. Any advice to a newcomer to the sport of hill running?"
On hill running, you must learn to climb. You know, put plenty of climbing in your legs and just steady away before you put all the pressure on. If you put too much pressure on them, on a bit of steep ground too soon, you've got to set off on a small stride and just work in and gradually lengthen your stride till you get to the point where you are shifting over the ground uphill without butching your energy and putting too much pressure on your legs. Once you get into a stride where you feel comfortable, keep it running, because once you start walking, going uphill, you'll continue walking. But you've got to learn that bit of running and keep it running together going uphill.
Yeah.
And once you get away with it.
Yeah, so the uphill running is something that everybody needs to work on.
And, you know, when you're running naturally on the better going, run as relaxed as possible, keep the tension out of your body, and try not to burn that energy up for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Go a long way on the little.
Yeah, so just like ping along.
Aye.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. Thank you very much for that. And we also have a non-beginner advice question. So Mick Souville, he says, has just got like 3 or so training tips for being a really good fell runner.
For being a really good fell runner, you know, you've got to get a lot of strength in your body, and you know, to be an all-round man, you know, because a lot of these fell run races now, especially the longer ones, you know, where you're going to be out for 5 hours, you've got to have your body strong, and you've got to be able to put long training runs in, come back, you know, have a scrub down, and go out and work and do things like that. That's what I used to do. I used to come home and off my long training runs. I would have scrubbed down in back as I was coming through, dry off, get some food in them and get out, and I would just work as though I had been nowhere. And that's the only way to get the body strong, is to put the running into it and the work after it.
Yeah, and did you follow any sort of special diet or anything like that to make you stronger?
I just ate a lot of rubbish, a lot of straight stuff, bars. But you know, like on a dead day, crossing there, I ran it on one biscuit. But say that was the way we were brought up. You know, you'd be gathering sheep maybe down at Gillithwaite from Middle Row, you know, which is about 10 or 12 miles away. And you'd be setting off about 7:30 in the morning, and maybe 5 or 6 o'clock at night, and you'd march all day off nothing.
Really?
Just a little stream now and again. You weren't given a pack of sandwiches to have a picnic when you're out gathering the sheep.
Oh. That sounds like hard work. So did you just have to eat a lot in the morning, like a big breakfast, and then like a lot when you got home for tea?
I got a bit of basin of porridge and a bit of old fat bacon and a sandwich out of it. The villagers had all the good bacon and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
In the wartime, and just after we I don't say we ate scraps, we lived, you know, reasonably well, like, but the villagers, they got the ham and the shoulders, and they got the old bit of fat that went between.
Yeah. And of course there was no energy gels and energy bars and all this kind of thing back then, was there?
Not an energy gel yet.
You haven't had one?
No.
No. Well, a Mars bar's pretty much an energy gel, isn't it? Oh, sorry, say that again.
I've got all that to come.
You could have had one on the arm the other weekend.
That would help, wouldn't it?
Think how fast you'd go if you had an energy gel, huh?
I'm just a plodder now.
We think you're doing brilliantly. John Pollard says, by the way, no way is Joss 85. He must be having us on.
I wish I was.
Well, your brain is definitely not 85, because you can remember every single thing, so much more than a lot of 85-year-olds that can't even remember what day of the week it is. So we've got Kyle Michael, who wants to know a bit more about the Wainwrights, 214 peaks in 7 days. He read your little book about it, and he says, do you think that the Wainwrights could gain as much notoriety as the Bob Graham Round over time, or would it be too hard for most folk?
It would be definitely too hard for most people, you know, because the average person isn't going to break, you know, 6 or 7 days. It's going to take longer, and he's going to have breaks to do it, you know. These people who are doing it in, you know, record time now, they've put a lot of work, a lot of groundwork in, you know, to get to where they are. And the ordinary layman can't just put his packed lunch up and go and say, right, I'm going to do the Wainwrights. He's got to work hard at it, you know. The shortcuts don't get you anywhere on something like that. Your body packs in, you know, before it gets rounded.
Yeah.
So he's got to do his homework, he's got to do his training, and he's got to sort his data sheet out. And
it's big undertaking, isn't it?
At least on the days he does it.
Yeah. And we've got a nice picture here of you with Paul Tierney, who holds the current record for the Wainwrights. And he's stroking a couple of dogs. Are they your dogs?
I think that his wife-to-be's dogs. Because it's the dogs.
Sarah McCormack.
Yes, they don't take a lot of notice. And his good ladies out with the dogs.
Yeah.
Good mannered dogs.
Oh.
And they do. But one word from Paul and they do as they like.
Oh, really?
It
was quite amusing, aye. But I tell you what, the lovely dogs. And I think Paul's just rather too soft. And he says, and the dogs know.
Yeah. Yeah, dogs can tell that kind of thing, isn't it? Because you're a great fan of dogs, aren't you? Have you got a dog at the moment?
I haven't, no. No, it's sort of the first time in my life I haven't really had a dog.
Mm.
And I miss my dog, like.
Yeah.
But, you know, it isn't fair on the dog, have a dog where I'm at now.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah. But you've had many good dogs over the years, haven't you? Some favourite dogs and, like, really good workers.
I've been lucky that I had a lot of good dogs. I've had one or two that weren't good dogs, but you know, every time they had a day or two and the fell, they started to take notice and do as they were told. There's nothing like tiring them out and then they take notice.
Yeah, it's hard to train a dog. But yeah, it's vital, isn't it, in what you were doing, being a shepherd. So you must have had a lot of good experiences out in the fells with them. But just going back to the Wainwrights for a moment, if we can, Steve Chilton wants to know, he says you were the second person to do all the Wainwrights in one go in 1986. He wants you to tell everyone, how did you plan the route for that?
To be quite honest, I didn't. I just more or less set off, you know. And the team I was going to start with was Colin Dawson and Andy Legema. They were going to do all the pacing between them. And anyways, the first day was really hot. And Colin, I think he burst a blood vessel in one of his lungs.
Oh my.
Ended up in hospital. That's a very serious thing, like, you know. Mm. And Andy, it was so hot, Andy had to, you know, give up before they got through the first day. And Ken Ledward was running about getting paces for us.
Mm.
It's all down to Ken Ledward, really, where he took the paces from. But I know towards the end, Dave Hall, he come up from London, and he spent about 4 days with his Dave. He was absolute great bloke, like, you know.
All Eaton had done it a few years before, hadn't he?
Mm.
So there was a route that he did before of one of the Blanks. Chris Bland had done it as well.
Aye, Chris Bland, you know, I'd done various versions of it.
Mm.
Bit of a route there, which just sort of followed. And then, as you rightly said, they just know a different line through maybe some of the fells and a different way to get to the different tops.
Yeah.
So there was a known where they were going.
Yeah.
There
was a vague route, but yeah, because I know that when I've spoken to Steve Birkinshaw, who broke the record, he was the first person after you to break that record, he said that he put it down to his different route more than his actual running. He says Joss was probably the better athlete than me, but I just did, like, he did a lot of like calculations, didn't he? He put it all in a spreadsheet because he's very much a spreadsheet person, and he got everything, and he did a slightly different route, and he said he was able to shave the time off because of that. And then obviously Paul Tierney then just followed that and was a bit faster as well.
There was a person who just used to run with, called Eric Roberts, who had a conversation with a guy down in Liverpool. So I've got all this in Joss's collection as well. And this guy down in Liverpool, I think he maybe worked for the Orient Survey people, and he was getting maps out and plotting different routes and different ways of doing them, as well as for the Wainwrights, for the 24-hour record as well. He did a bit of work on them, but especially on the Wainwrights. So they took basic Alan Heaton's and Chris's routes, and they just kept modifying it. But you've got to remember, in them days, it was before apps on your phone when you could Strava or app on your phone. Like that. It was just a matter of getting the map out, wouldn't it, and just going shortcut, good. And then just having edge and thinking, yeah, that is a shorter way. But
yeah. And you can't even tell from the map either, can you, what the terrain's going to be like. So it could be shorter, but not great to run over. Yeah. But it is, I do think it's really interesting how just recently, because you held the Pennine Way fastest time as well as the Wainwrights, and just recently there's been a real resurgence of these, like taking things away from the Bob Graham Round, which was like 2018, like it was all about the Bob Graham Round, Killian, blah blah blah. So how do you feel, Joss, when people break these long-standing records of yours? Does it feel like, are you disappointed, or are you just like, yep, shake that man, woman, whoever it is, by the hand?
No, I think it's fantastic to do it, really. You know, I know what went into my Pennine Way. You know, I had a little bit of a training session before it, and I was running well. And the first day I set off up to Cheviot, I was coming in at a hell of a rate of knots, and my left leg went in right up to my thigh, and it didn't come out.
Oh.
Next morning it was black and blue. And it was a main leg, like the other leg just goes for a ride, you know. Anyways, from the first 100 mile, I ran in, you know, just fairly relaxed, and I was, you know, going well. And we stopped at Dufferin for the night. I got up next morning, and I couldn't hardly walk. And I just had to hitch down to Kirkyetten, down to the finish.
Yeah.
And I would have finished well under 3 days.
Yeah.
But my pace had went for fish and chips and had 2 pints with it at the same time.
Really? Oh, no, gutted. So near and yet so far. It's an awful long way, that road, though, after all that way, isn't it? It's only like a few miles, isn't it? But it must feel like eternity.
Right. You know, then the 2 hard days like this, I couldn't side out at all, you know. And then my Achilles tendons both went, and it's rather painful.
Yeah.
So those people.
But the people who do it now, you know, there's some really good distance runners.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, when they don't, if they try and get under 3 days, you know, they come in and you can tell they've run it.
Yeah, yeah. So have you been following like Sabrina Verdi and Damien Hall and John Kelly on all their attempts?
Like, I know John, we're going to go down to see him in, but something happened I couldn't get. And he was going to be well under, you know, the record.
Yeah.
It was about 5 or 6 hours up and going like a steam engine. But when he finished, he had steam coming out of his ears. It was...
On his last legs.
He was on his last legs, fella. But, you know, fantastic run. But, you know, that he hadn't a lot of steam left in him.
Yeah, well, as it should be if he'd left it all on the course, hey?
That's the way it is, the record, which is what it's got to be.
Yeah, fantastic. And so we've just got a question here from Philip Haddock, and he says, what are Joss's thoughts on the popularity of fell running over the years?
Well, it's going the best now it's probably ever done, you know, since the shutdown. And of course, there's been a lot of people, you know, done some fantastic times on many, many things, you know, and they've had more time to think about it, more time to prepare for it. And there's more people coming into fell running through this trail running. You know, it's got an awful lot of people out, because going back about 10, 15 years ago, the numbers for like the Enderdale and the Wasdale and, you know, one or two of those longer races, they were just going to nearly have to close the races down. And then they've got the resurgence now where we're getting the numbers and the sport's going the right way, you know, which is absolute marvellous.
Brilliant. And Anna, we've got a fun question here from Joe Faulkner, who I know very well. Hi, Joe, if you're still watching, so we're going to ask your question now. It's Joss, he wants to know, do you want Guinness, red wine, or a pint from the Strand? And is the Strand the pub in Wasdale?
Yeah.
Aye, Wasdale.
Yeah, so would you order a Guinness, a red wine, or a pint? I suppose it depends what you've been doing.
Aye, I usually have a pint of Guinness any time we go in the Wastwater.
Yeah.
We've won the other now, like.
Yeah. What is it that you like about Guinness? Because it's quite thick, isn't it? Like, I'm not a massive fan of it. What do you like about it?
Well, it saved my life when I was 4 years old, Guinness.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The tonsils. And in them days, they were very rough taking the tonsils out. In fact, I can still feel them taking it out.
Oh.
That scoop thing, they just push it in your throat. And I couldn't eat for about 5 or 6 weeks. And I was only about 4 years old. And my mother fed us on cream and Guinness. And, you know, that's why I'm so big and strong, like.
Oh, that's really sweet. I might try that with my son when he's 4, to see if he likes cream and Guinness. And John Pollard, he's the one who asked about whether your son was running at Duddon Valley. He says, great podcast. Now I know I'm going to be running alongside the great man on Saturday as I'm doing Duddon Valley Race 2. It will be an honour and a privilege to do that and to meet Joss in person. So look out for John at the Duddon Valley Race.
I will. And make him very, very welcome.
Ah, brilliant. And so before we before oh sorry, say that again, I talked over you.
We'll have a pint of Guinness together at the finish.
Brilliant, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, he can buy you a pint, can't he? So just before we go tonight, I just really want to talk about the next project that you're working on now. It's kind of hush hush, kind of secret, but we're going to talk. We can talk a little bit about it on here, can't we? Because you're writing a book that's going to be out in October. Can you tell me a bit more about what it's about and yeah, anything that you're able to share, basically?
Well, it's on the lakes, Mayors and Waters. And that day was probably one of the nicest days I ever had in the Lake District. I visited all the lakes, Mayors, Waters, on a nice sunny day. I know it was a little bit of drizzle when we came into Keswick at night, but we had a most beautiful day ever. And we saw all the Lake District, and we visited all the lakes, Mayors and Waters. And it was just a privilege to be there, you know. I never had a bad patch. I never had any cramp. I had a lot of decent, good people out with us. And it was just what Fellamining was all about. Just.
That sounds fantastic. And if everybody's watching live, if you want a message to say a message to Joss before we go, then type it now, because I'm just going to say to everybody what the Lakes, Mears and Waters is. This was a record that you undertook in 1983, is that right? And it's 105 miles, and you did it in 19 hours and 20 minutes. So do you think that when people have read this book, that might make a sort of a resurgence in going for that record, do you reckon?
I think so. There's more interest this last 2 or 3 years. There's one or two others done it. The one I did, it just Kentmaren, if you know, and it isn't on the original route. Yeah, I went to Kentmare twice, where other runners just go through and do Kentmare and go up Long Slattle. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I went back up Kentmare, the Kentmare Water, or Kentmare, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's lovely.
I don't
spot.
How they call a valley Kentmare, and it's got a, it might be man-made, but it looks as much a water as any others.
Yeah, do you know roughly how many there are of these lakes, mares and waters? 27 of them. Oh, brilliant. And so do you like have a little bit of a swim in any of them, like to, like, you know, get the legs going again?
Give it a good shake round and put my thumb up.
Yeah.
So the book's going to be the story of Joss running in 1983, interspaced with some of his stories in running, like the Dutton Valley Race, maybe a story about that, or a mountain trail when it's in a certain area. Plus a little bit of the, maybe some of like the history of the area he's going to run through, maybe some of like the woods, maybe, you know, different things in different places. Plus superb photos, you know, we've got some really good photos coming. Not from, some from 1983 and some obviously from now. But it should show the Lake District off at its best. Because as Joss rightly said, it's going to go right through the Lake District. Every valley, you're going to jump over in a valley. You're going to go to a place like Skeggles Water, which people don't go to, or the Grope Water, which people don't go to. Mm-hmm. And get out of the weird places as well, you know, Overwater, another one comes to mind. No one really goes to Overwater. It's a bit of an oddity, but it's a nice place when you get there.
I really like the idea of it being the bodies of water as well, because everybody's all about, oh, the Wainwrights tick off all the peaks, it's all the mountains, mountains, mountains. But the Lake District is called the Lake District for a reason, isn't it? So I think that's much more of a doable thing, is to tick off 27 lakes, isn't it? Or maybe have a dip in each of them, like, because it's 100 miles, you wouldn't get everybody doing it all in one day necessarily. So maybe it could be a good, like, long weekend project for people, or a week-long holiday project. It sounds really great.
Aye, that's you've signed up for it now.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, oh, great, that's my next film. Off I go. My next week-long holiday will be doing the Lakes, Meres and Waters. And yeah, so if you hear word that somebody's going to do it, would you be there to shake their hand at the end? Is it something that's close to your heart in that way?
Be a nice thing to do. If they pick us up, I'll be there, definitely.
Yeah.
Just come through. Comes by down from down to Greendale. Comes down to Greendale Bridge as well. So it's just like they said, if you know the schedule, you made pay the Greendale Bridge and push them on the way, and then made them at the end. Eh?
Brilliant. Oh, that would be nice. You could hand them a Mars bar and a pint of Guinness, couldn't you, Joss?
Yeah.
And just one final question, Joss, before I read you out some lovely things that everybody's been saying to you. I'll just read a few of them because there's loads of them. What is your favourite thing about fell running? What makes it such a brilliant sport? Why do you like it so much? And why are you still getting out there on the fells?
It's the camaraderie in fell running that exists in no other sport. The finest people on this earth. The fell runners, and I've been very privileged to be part of it.
And we're privileged to have you. You've got an MBE, haven't you, for your services to the sport. So I think that's very, very well deserved. And it's brilliant because you're also donating the profits from this book to the Braithay Trust as well. Did you just want to mention what that is?
I think most of our runs we've ever done is, you know, been for a deserving charity. And I think in this day and age, there's so many deprived, you know, young people who have probably gone wrong in their lives, probably through no fault of their own. And it really gives them a great opportunity in life to turn their lives around. And over 70% of the children who go to Brady never offend again. And it makes them into good human beings. And I think it's a fantastic place. And there's a lot of people don't know Brady exists, which is awfully sad.
Yeah, so it's a local place. It's a big house, isn't it? And they go there and they do outdoor activities.
It overlooks Windermere.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, which is one of the 27 meres. So they could start there doing the Lakes, Meres and Waters.
Yeah.
You've got it in one.
Awesome. That's brilliant. Oh, I've really enjoyed chatting to you tonight, Joss. And you as well, Toddy. It's been a real pleasure. I just want to read out some nice comments. So we've got Andrew Simpson says, good on you, Joss. You look like you've got another 85 years in front of you too. And we've got Arlene M, who says, thank you for the inspiration. ACOG says, thank you for answering my questions, sir. Looking forward to reading the book. So you've got at least one sale from doing this. And then Kyle Michael said, today should be a rest day, but now I feel a hill calling me. Thanks for the podcast, guys. Stay safe all. And Steve Chilton finally says, good to see you looking so well, Joss. All the best.
Thank you very much to everyone. Good luck to them.
Thanks, Joss and Toddy. It's been a real pleasure chatting to you. So I'll let you go on with your evening now, and hope to see you one day on the fells if I ever do the Lakes, Meres and Waters. Good luck with the book.
I hope so.
Fantastic. Well, see you, everybody. Good night.
Thank you.
Bye.
Hi, it's Claire here. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. These live chats take place every Wednesday evening at 6:30 p.m. UK time on Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel. And the link is in the show notes. I just wanted to let you know that you can find this and loads more advice and inspiration and gear tests all about trail and ultra running on my YouTube channel, Wild Ginger Running. There are training tips, advice from elite athletes, top coaches, nutritious recipes, key exercises, injury prevention information, and tons of trail kit reviewed, from running packs to poles, waterproofs to head torches, GPS watches, and shoes, and did I mention shoes? I've been going for a few years now, so there's a huge archive of content to help you out with your trail and ultra running. To quickly and easily find the information you need, simply type your query into the Google search box and then write Wild Ginger Running after it. Then Google will show you whatever blog posts or films I have on that topic. Give it a try. And if you appreciate listening and all the information I share on YouTube, you're also very welcome to support me on Patreon, which gets you some additional excellent perks and the chance to win some awesome prizes. For as little as the price of a cup of coffee every month, patrons get discounts, extra films, access to the exclusive Facebook and Strava groups, the chance to ask questions to every live chat guest, plus automatic entry into my monthly competition to win £400 worth of trail and ultra running gear. There are only about 150 patrons, so the odds on a win are way better than the lottery. Interested? Find me at patreon.com/wildgingerrunning. Thanks for listening, guys. Have fun, enjoy your run, and I'll see you on the trails.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.